Good evening, Truth Seekers. Mike Malloy here on the Nova M Radio Network. Thanks for cruising on by, tuning in. Stick around for a while. We have Dancing Bears coming up a little bit later in the program tonight. Okay, for those of you who have access to our in-studio video cam, this will... Oh, we haven't got it set up yet? Oh, jeez. All right, well, forget the bears. Do you know one of the stories that have been... I've studiously ignored it, but it's just driving me crazy, and it was the promo that we put together that went out to our affiliates today, and that's the story about Hillary Clinton's campaign. They had a plant in the audience at one of her speeches in Iowa. Someone was coached to ask her a question. Oh my God. Oh, no. Oh, no. See? Further proof that she is the Antichrist. Oh, call the authorities. It's one thing to listen to Hillary Clinton or to listen to any candidate for that matter and just say, no, not for me. It's something else again to obsess the way right-wing male-dominated media is obsessing over Hillary Clinton. And then they blame her. They say, well, she's whining. She's saying the men are ganging up on her. Well, Jesus Christ, they are. No, I mean it's just insane. I've never seen anything like the right-wing feeding frenzy over Hillary Clinton. They really all need to wear steel cod pieces to protect themselves because they feel so threatened by this woman. I don't get this. Here's a woman that most Republican men would just love to have as a wife. Why? Well, the men get caught diddling one of their secretaries or interns, and the wife doesn't leave them. I mean, that's a Republican's wet dream. Am I going too far tonight? All right, so it's not a boy. But still, you know, I mean, most Republican men apparently would like to have sex with another man. Not that there's anything wrong with that. As a matter of fact, it can be kind of thrilling. But not when you're a homophobic freak. Oh, never mind. There I go again. I digress. But the Hillary Clinton story, it's just amazing to me. I've never seen this in my life. They're terrified of this woman. Terrified. Did you hear what she did? No, what? She had a plant in the audience and asked her a question. Oh, Christ, you're kidding me. Katie, bar the door, quick! And then the Clinton campaign operation in Iowa, where this occurred, was forced to admit that it had set up the question on climate change. After Clinton spoke, a student in the crowd was invited to pose the question. The student said,
as a young person, I'm worried about the long-term effects of global warming. How does your plan combat climate change?
And Clinton responded. And the cover was blown on all this a few days later when the Grinnell College website reported that one of its students, Muriel Gallo Chazanov, had been encouraged to ask the question by a Clinton employee. She said,
well, one of the senior staffers told me what to ask.
Clinton's spokesman admitted the question had been arranged, but said, this is not standard policy and will not be repeated again. That's kind of redundant, isn't it? Will not be repeated.
I can't understand this. I can't understand this.
Oh, my God! She had a college student. She asked a college student to ask a question. Oh, holy jumping God.
Well, I have to say, in defense of the critics of Hillary here, I agree. I don't think we should have a president who stages fake press conferences for FEMA or plants reporters or puts fake happy news stories out there as local packages or does little fakey troop talks where they coach them.
Oh, you're just you're just
a bunch of boxes
you're
out
just
there
you're just working towards your impeachment rap again.
Now, I disagree. I don't think we should have presidents who fake up any kind of Q&A session.
You're just working toward up towards your impeachment rap again, aren't you? Huh?
Good Lord knows Bush would never do anything like that.
What else do we have here? A little bit more on Veterans Day. I'm still my head is still reeling about the veterans that were arrested. There was a picture today. I guess it occurred in was it in Boston? Or was it someplace else? A couple of old guys standing there. These are either, they couldn't be Korean. Well, they could be Korean War veterans. More likely Vietnam vets. Old guys, you know, my age. And they're being arrested. They're being handcuffed. And they're holding signs about this illegal occupation and this vicious, lying son of a bitch in the White House who has now cost the deaths of hundreds of thousands of people, including 4,000 of our own. And there these veterans stand, and they have gags around their mouths that they put themselves, you know, representing the silencing that has been forced upon veterans who want to march in parades and are told by organizing committee, get out of here, you're not a real veteran. I'm not. I was in a combat zone. How can you be a real veteran and be against the war? Get out of here. And the miserable bastards that make these dictatorial rules and comments to veterans would crap their pants if they ever got within 1,000 miles of a combat zone. They are chicken hawk Republican right-wing cowards. But that picture of these two older gentlemen, that's what's happened to the Vietnam generation. We got older. Yes, we did. There they stand. With these bandanas around their mouths like gags, and the police dutifully handcuffing them to take them away. Son of a bitch. So that, on top of everything else that we've heard, it's hard for me to put this subject aside. However, I will try. This comes from Radio Vegan. Quote, they hate us for our freedoms. I quote, how many thousands of times has Bush said that? On Veterans Day, in at least two cities, American cities, veterans who served in Iraq, Afghanistan, or previous wars were not allowed to participate in Veterans Day festivities and parades because, are you ready for this? They had the wrong opinion. Veterans were arrested. Apparently, you can't serve in the military and disagree with the decider on failed policy. So much for freedom. Oh, and Bush failed to show up for ceremonies at Arlington National Cemetery. As every president before him has, he sent five-time draft dodger Dick Cheney in his place. Yeah. He was too busy feeding Chancellor Merkel hamburger meat. Huh? And what about this Giuliani draft dodger? He was a law clerk when he was eligible to go into the military. This is before the lottery. And he had the judge he was working for declare his job critical to national security. The Selective Service Board, some of you will know what I'm talking about when I use that term, the Selective Service Board had not classified law clerks as being an occupation that was worthy of hiding draft dodgers like Rudy Giuliani. Some occupations were worthy of hiding draft dodgers, but not that one. This is from Randy, who spends time in Seoul, South Korea, and time here in the States. He writes, Dear Mike, I spent 12 and a half years in the Air Force and have a constant reminder of it from the whiplash I got pulling 7.5 G's in the back seat of an F-4 Phantom. I got downsized by Cheney post-Desert Storm because they wanted to cut 500,000 military members from the service to keep from having to eventually give us pensions if we reached the 20-year mark. Oh, well, it was fun while it lasted. But what really grites me is when I read in the Stars and Stripes the young soldiers who write letters to the editor blaming Clinton for ruining the military. Hello? I got downsized by Cheney 2 years before Clinton took office. All right, there's some more here. Let me read this after the break.
Look at all we've done with the saber and a gun. Tell me, was it worth it all? For I flew the final mission in the Japanese skies. And I set off the mighty mushroom roar. When I saw their cities burning, I knew that I was learning. But I ain't marching anymore. Now the labor leader's screaming when they close the missile plants. United Fruit screams at the Cuban shore. Call it peace or call it treason. Call it love or call it reason. But I...
I understand the anguish that some feel about the death that takes place. I grieve for every death.
Twenty-one past the hour. All right, back to this email from Randy, who's back in Seoul, South Korea. He spent 12 and a half years in the Air Force. Have a constant reminder from whiplash. He got pulling 7.5 G's in the back seat of an F-4 Phantom. He writes, it was fun while it lasted, but what really gripes me is when I read in the Stars and Stripes young soldiers who write letters to the editor blaming Clinton for ruining the military. Hello? I got downsized by Cheney 2 years before Clinton took office. But the real reason I'm writing is to tell you my experience this summer at the Missouri State Fair, the opening day parade. As I stand watching near the review stand, here comes the float for the local chapter of the VFW. It was actually a flatbed truck with folding chairs set up facing a podium near the cab with flags flanking it. What really got me incensed was the banner that was on the side of the truck. It read, "One Nation, One Flag, One Language." I was totally enraged. The first thing that popped into my mind was to shout out, "Hey, you left out one religion, one race." I didn't, because I didn't want to get, how should I phrase this, busted. You see, I take it literally when you keep it lit. But the rage is still in me. Obviously, their intent was to demean Spanish-speaking people who may be doing some of those jobs in central Missouri that few others will do, like picking apples in local orchards or packing frozen chicken in very cold and wet conditions at one of those major recipients of the Farm Bill, like, you know, Swanson, Archer Daniels Midland, or Monsanto. I know I'm rambling on, but I think it's worth mentioning that there are several dozen recipients of the Medal of Honor who are of Hispanic origin. Blood and sacrifice needs no translation or disrespect. Randy in Seoul. Yeah, when I read this Randy's email, I thought, one nation, one flag, one language. That reminds me of ein Volk, ein Staat, ein Führer. Same thing. Todd in Mundelein, Illinois writes, "Mike, regarding those right-wing nutcases who are all up in arms about Hillary's supposed plant in the audience, somebody needs to remind these bastards about President Chucklenuts' rehearsed Q&A session with the troops in Iraq on October 13th, 2005, where the troops were coached." And then he writes something I can't say on the radio. Woo! Gotcha, Todd. Yeah, you know, how big of a story was it? I mean, we did it on the program. We were with Air America then, right? We had the audio, the off-camera audio of the woman coaching the soldiers in Iraq as to what to say. And we, what? Yeah, they had a video link up between D.C. And Baghdad, the Green Zone. And how big of a story was that? We did it. Randy Rhodes probably did it. Tom Hartman did it. Who else did it? I'm sure a couple of liberals scattered around the country did it on talk radio, but it was not that big of a deal on cable news or on network news. And here's the story about Hillary Clinton. It's astonishing. Just astonishing. Moving right along. Yeah, today, yes, my dear.
Well, I was going to say, what's more astonishing to me is that if it were an isolated incident, that little troop talk where he got caught, oops, one time,
right.
You know, but it's more like, oops, I did it again and again and again
and again.
It happens all the time. And how many times have you heard about actual protesters or actual people who want to ask a real actual question?
Not allowed.
An actual
not allowed.
Bush appearance. They're herded off. They're carted away.
Yeah, well, not allowed. Today was prayer day here in... here in Georgia. It was on. I watched ABC Network News tonight, and I understand it's going to be on Nightline too. Holy Toledo, so to speak. But there was Governor Sonny Perdue, our Republican governor. Oh, Sonny Perdue. Yup, there he was. stepped up to a podium outside the state capitol today and led a solemn crowd of several hundred people in prayer for rain. The event was billed as an interfaith ceremony. Now, interfaith, what does that mean? That means Catholics, Protestants, Jews, Muslims, Baha'is, Hindus, who else? Who am I leaving out? People who practice Shintoism, Buddhists, right? Well, there were only three Protestant ministers. What made it interfaith, I guess, was two of them were white, one was black. So I guess that's interfaith. I have no idea. Now, Purdue is a Baptist, and our governor and our lieutenant governor, Casey Cagle. Casey and Sonny. Only in the South. Yeah, we're Baptists. By God, we believe in none of this dribbling water on your head like them Catholics do. Man, you got to be submerged. Whew. Anyway, Purdue said the following after a choir provided a hymn. He said, "We've come together here simply for one reason, and one reason only, to very reverently and respectfully pray up a storm." Purdue said, "It's time to appeal to him who can and will make a difference." And then a church choir belted out, "What a mighty God we serve," and "Amazing Grace." And there was a keyboardist, and preachers spoke, and worshipers chanted amen. And some stood with their eyes closed, and their arms reached up to heaven. "Give me some rain, Jesus!" Nearby, some 20 demonstrators from the Atlanta Freethought Society staged a protest against holding a religious observance at the seat of state government, but nobody really paid any attention to them. I don't care what they may know. I don't care where they may go. I don't care what they may know. It's just all right for me.
I see a lot of the Bubbas who work in my administration who've shown up.
It's 25 before the hour, so while the governor and the lieutenant governor and a couple of hundred of these eye-rolling, snake-handling Baptists gathered at the state capitol today, on tax-supported ground to pray to some sort of cloud being in this ecumenical prayer service, which included three Protestant pastors. The Atlanta Freethought Society staged a protest against holding this kind of a service at the seat of government, about 20 demonstrators, and police moved them before the event. So that the ones who were chanting to the cloud being wouldn't have to see the atheists who were insisting that the Constitution be honored, in spite of the fact that we were in the presence of the holy rollers who were raising their hands to the cloud being asking for rain. Now, the weird part of the whole story, of course, is meteorologists said earlier this week there was a slight possibility of rain tomorrow. After that little rain is predicted for the rest of the week, we have a deficit here in Atlanta of damn near a foot and a half. I just shudder to think what's going to happen when we get some sprinkles tonight, you know?
See, you got to have faith, Mike.
I'll have faith if somebody sends a hurricane up here so we can get some of these lakes and reservoirs filled up, right? Pastor Maurice Watson of the Beulah Land Bible Church, and I watched him on, they had him on TV tonight. He was really something. Pastor Maurice Watson. Lord, he stood up there and said, "I believe in miracles. How about you?" So I said to the TV screen, "No, I don't. I believe in convection and air, wind currents and jet streams, but miracles? No, I'm afraid not there, Reverend." Beulah Land. I've seen it. What is Beulah Land? Do you know what that is? Beulah Land? That's something in the Bible, I know. Beulah Land Baptist Church. You see that all over the South. Usually in some little hollow back in North Georgia or northeastern Alabama, and Beulah Land Baptist. Anybody know what Beulah Land is all about? I thought Beulah, I remember Beulah was a maid, an African-American maid on a radio program when I was a little teeny kid, and then it switched to television. This is back in the day, right, where you had two black people in entertainment, Beulah and Rochester.
I'm sorry, Mr. Benny. Why, Mr. Benny, you want me to bring you so? All right, Mr. Benny, I'm coming.
Oh, Rochester.
Yes, Mr. Benny.
No, y'all don't remember that. I've gotten a couple of emails here from people who say that I'm dead wrong and Kathy's absolutely right about the Hillary Clinton thing. That it's just more of the same-o if you have a politician who's putting plants in there. Y'all are not understanding, I don't think. Maybe I didn't make it clear. I think it sucks, too. My point, any politician that does that, it shows a decided lack of confidence in one's own campaign when you have to put plants and shills out there. That was not the point. My point is simply this. If Hillary Clinton has a plant out there, media and right-wing bloggers and the right-wing the talk radio goes absolutely nuts. They go ballistic. And yet it's so common. George Bush, the president of the United States, what the hell is Hillary? She's a candidate. Okay. But y'all, please don't misunderstand. I'm not saying it's right, and I'm not trying to justify it. I'm talking about the outrage and the reaction by these hypocritical thugs that comprise the news media, especially the political aspect of the news media. Come on, cut me some slack here. We still have 2.5 hours of program tonight. TPM writes, I mentioned the Antichrist, so TPM writes, remember when the semi-popular thought was that Ronald Wilson Reagan was the Antichrist due to the numerical sequence of his name, 666? I am, TPM writes, irreligious, yet it occurred to me that George Walker Bush Jr. is also numerically similar. If you tie in the Jr., 666, the JR. And perhaps the JR means justify revelation. Look at his record pertaining to natural disasters, famine, disease, disease prevention, and ushering in the apocalypse in general. And it makes some sense if you believe in that sort of thing. I realize that any attention to this topic is irrelevant, but you might agree that it's at least a curious point, especially among the nut jobs who assign any importance to biblical scripture. Yeah, well, we've had a couple of Republicans who fit that 666 category fairly comfortably. And the number of the beast. I've never could understand that. What does that mean? And the number of the beast or the Antichrist shall be 666. What does that mean? Six what? 666 what? Inches? Miles? Eyes? What the hell does it mean?
And the Well, Mike, if you were a Christian, it would all be clear to you. But you're a non-believing atheist bastard who's going to burn in hell, so we're not going to take the time to explain it to you.
This is from Brian in Olympia, Washington. Mike, a friend just called me to inform me that riot police are closing in on the anti-war demonstrators who are still working to block military shipments coming through the port of Olympia, Washington. I'm told that they need more support, perhaps more eyewitnesses to this latest battle with the police. Amazingly, these protesters succeeded again today in delaying these shipments. The local blog has video and more perspective on behalf of the demonstrators. Okay, here it is. Oly, like Olympia, O-L-Y, blog.net. Olyblog.net. Check it out. Olyblog.net. Olyblog.net. And then he references an article in the Olympian local paper. And Bob at superbeans.com writes, Mike, I'm just wondering, what gives anyone hope that this drift into fascism can be averted and rolled back? I don't have a clue. I'm so much happier these days since I gave up hope. Now I can focus on my distractions without being distracted by remembering that the fabulous fascistic future looks very bleak indeed. I was just wondering if you or any one of your listeners had a reasonable semblance of hope about the future. And if so, why? I'm not completely committed to being Mr. Buzzkill Party Pooper Pants. I'm open to suggestions. Well, my hope is I guess it's a cyclical thing. You know, I've had, I'm talking strictly politics here. I've had, there have been times in my life when my political radar said, duck and cover, big time, because it's all over. Here comes the boots. Here comes the stomp, 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 and the knock on the door at 3 o'clock in the morning. And I've seen it turn around. I've seen that maybe twice in my life, or I've sensed that, that it was all over, maybe three times. It's all over. This country is plunging into fascism. And every single time at the last minute, the plunge was averted. Now, granted, we kept moving toward fascism, but the plunge was averted. And as long as we're moving at a relatively slow pace into fascism, there's always a chance that it'll be stopped. And that's wherein lies my hope, is that since we are not being invaded by a fascist dictator, since we have our own homegrown fascists, who, frankly, are kind of cowardly. You know, everybody from George Bush and Dick Cheney to the scum suckers in national media like Bill O'Reilly or Rush Limbaugh or Sean Hannity, all of them are really cowards. Because they are fascists, and they lust after fascists, the way normal people lust after sex. These people, and there are women among them, they're not just the men, but they lust after fascism. There is something exciting and stimulating and orgasmic about the leather and the boots and the salutes and the militarism and the elites and the ruling party and the iron crosses and the eagles flying and you know the gloriously mandala almost like flags, and it's just like but they're still cowards. Because if they really believed this, really had the courage, then the rat bastards would go ahead. And, I mean, how many directives does Chucklenuts have to sign before he actually uses them? I mean, there are enough restrictions on the books now that this program could get both Kathy and me and possibly Molly put in the slam. And you too, if you emailed me ever. So why doesn't this cowardly son of a bitch use some of the rules he's put in place? Why doesn't O'Reilly or Hannity, why don't they, come out and just say, look, we're fascists, goddammit! We want an end to this liberal crap! You know, you have fascist parties all over Europe. They declare their fascism. Some of them hide behind the nationalist label, like Pat Buchanan. But they're fascists anyway, and they're proud of it. But the reason the fascists in this country don't go ahead and make a move is because they know what will happen, Bob. And maybe there you can find some hope. Hey, seriously, I have a message here that I've been asked to forward. It goes out to Chuck. Chuck, you've got to call your brother Kurt. It's very, very, very important. Chuck, you listen on Sirius, so you're probably listening tonight. Call your brother Kurt. Really. Now, normally we don't do that, but this is not a normal situation. So, Chuck, call Kurt right now. All right? From the Music Factory, he writes, Mike, this goes to Bob's question about hope. If you have a huge, absolutely pitch-dark room and you light a match, no more dark. In that light is the hope. That totally dark room now has light in it. It can no longer be said that it's totally dark. In thousands of years of human history, millions of years of Earth history, and billions of years of galactic history, darkness has never figured out how to do that. It can never overtake light in that way. And that's enough to get me out of bed one more day. Better dead than red, the Music Factory. Okay. What else we got here? Oh, I like this. Kathy, since we shop at Target on a fairly regular basis, don't we?
Sometimes hourly.
Well, they have the best prices on bathroom tissue and paper towels. Oh, my God.
And Molly toothbrushes and Molly toothpaste and Molly shampoo.
As long as it doesn't come from China.
Yeah, we have to watch that.
No, you do. You have to read all the labels now. Discount retailer Target is requesting U.S. government approval to add a warning to the labels of meat sold in its stores that have been treated with carbon monoxide to keep the product looking fresh. Have you heard about this? I remember about a year ago I heard about this. Hamburger, you know, ground up meat. In the first place, be careful if you're eating any meat any longer. You know, that's ground up. Or frozen fish. But I remember about a year ago, maybe it was 2 years ago, they were talking about treating, it started out with hamburger meat because, you know, when it hits the air, it gets enough oxygen or carbon dioxide or whatever the hell it is, it starts to turn brown. It looks like what it is, a ground up corpse. So if you, apparently if you blow carbon monoxide over it or blow through it or whatever, it perks it right back up and makes it look pink. I had heard before, when I was in high school, a friend of mine, his parents of a friend of mine owned a mortuary right down the street from the high school. Oh, I could tell you stories about that. But he used to tell us that his dad really liked getting the bodies of people who had committed suicide by sucking carbon monoxide because their skin was pink. They looked just healthy as hell. They were dead, but they looked real healthy. So Target wants the U.S. government to allow them or to approve of Target adding a warning to the labels of meat sold in its stores that have been treated with carbon monoxide. Target said in a press release, quote, because certain modified atmosphere packaging preserves the color of meat. Certain modified atmosphere packaging. Oh, that would be blasting it with carbon monoxide. Target is working to add labels to those products that encourage guests. Guests? We're a guest when we go into Target? Not to rely on color or the use or freeze-by date alone to judge the freshness of the product. Target sent the request to U.S. Department of Agriculture, which is run by farmer Nazis now. The Department of Agriculture's Food Safety and Inspection Service requires a use-by or sell-by date on meat sold in packages containing carbon monoxide to ensure the shelf life of the product ends before the spoilage occurs. Target must obtain approval from the Food Safety and Inspection Service. That's part of the Department of Agriculture. Target must obtain approval to add a label about carbon monoxide treatment because that agency is responsible for overseeing the safety of meat, poultry, and eggs and the labels on those products. Oh, my God. Anybody like some ground beef right about now? Barf.
I feel like feeding Angela a hamburger right by now.
Yeah, she got some, didn't she? Angela?
That's how she says it over there in Munich, or wherever she's from, Hamburg. I don't know. It's beautiful out here today, Crawford.
What else we got here? All right, we have some very, very enraging and at the same time terribly entertaining stuff coming up in the next hour about Bush. and a couple of bills he vetoed today and what was in those bills. Also, Dianne Feinstein is facing censure in the state of California, I believe. A coalition of progressive Democrats in California is trying to get a censure motion to pass at the executive board meeting this weekend of the progressive Democrats. I attended their conference, didn't I, in Sacramento? I went out to that a couple of years ago. Yeah. Good luck, folks. I hope you get it. Well, we have a little information about that. And one soundbite tonight from Chuckle Nuts. And, by the way, did you know that an Iranian religious leader, the Ayatollah Mohammad Imami Kashani, said in his last Friday sermon at Tehran University campus that not only is Iran not pursuing nuclear weapons, but that to do so would be a violation of Islamic law. He said, quote, production of a nuclear bomb and even thinking of its production are forbidden from Islamic point of view, end quote. Yeah. It's forbidden by Christians, too, right? Oh, and Jews. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio. Welcome back. It's about 7 past the hour. And once again, Chuck, if you're listening on Sirius Satellite Radio tonight, call your brother Kurt, okay? Chuck, call Kurt. You know who I'm talking about. Just do it. Do it. This is from our good friend Gordon in Oklahoma City, who went on the cruise with us to all those wonderful places in Mexico. Gordon writes, Mike, a Mark Twain quote comes to mind when hearing of Georgia's public pleading to a sky fairy for rain. Twain said, quote, it is better to read the weather forecast before we pray for rain, end quote. And then Gordon adds, one would think the creator of the universe was already aware of your state's need for moisture. Yeah, it's awful, Gordon, and you know, my position on religious fol-de-rol is well known. Somebody wants to pray. But I do believe in the separation of church and state. I believe that as strongly as I believe anything, because, for the obvious reasons, no point getting into it. For the obvious reasons, once the state has the power to make something official like a religion, your ass is grass, and so is the rest of you, too. You're doomed. That's it. All over. Goodbye. Click. Down comes the shade. But as far as praying for rain, if somebody wants to pray for rain, go ahead. What did we hear on the news tonight, Kathy? There is a move here in the South, or is it just Georgia, to get the Ten Commandments inside everyone's home, a document? What the hell was that story? Do you remember what that was about? Is that going to be voluntary? Somebody shows up at my door and says, put this up on the wall, or you're in trouble. There's going to be a loud click as the bolt slides back, and you know, we chamber one, and then it goes back down. Oh, my God.
I think it was something about a group of people who were behind the, like the Alabama Ten Commandment people. They've stopped their efforts to get them into public buildings, and they're refocusing on just getting them into people's homes.
Well, if it's voluntary, fine. That's what I've been advocating ever since these knuckle dragging clowns over in Alabama, when they're not stealing our water, they're trying to They're trying to get the Ten Commandments on every public building they can possibly get it on. My position has always been, if you want the Ten Commandments on display, put it on your front yard. Put it in your bedroom. Put it in your john. Put it in your oven. Put it in your refrigerator. Just don't put it on public buildings, because public buildings are paid for with taxes, and not everybody believes what you believe, sucker. So if it's just a voluntary move for people to put the Ten Commandments up on their wall, go ahead. That's great. Seven of those commandments just talk about what a creep God to the Israelites, what a creep he really was, or to the Hebrews, I should say, what a creep he really was. Seven of them are about him, right? What's the first one? What's the first commandment? I am the Lord thy God. Thou shalt have no other gods before me, or I will stomp you into the mud. I will kill your family. I will salt the earth that you built your yurt on, and I'll butcher all your sheep. I'm God! Okay. Nobody's arguing. Feinstein was one of the two Democrat traitors on the Senate Judiciary Committee. Schumer was the other one, who voted to send Michael Mukasey's nomination to the full Senate, which meant Mukasey, an incipient Nazi of the worst kind, is now the chief law enforcement officer. Now, the odd part is, of course, there was a time in the not-so-distant past when the Attorney General of the United States was there to represent the people. I know that sounds weird, doesn't it? He was there to represent the people, to make sure that the laws of the United States Constitution and other laws duly passed by the Congress of the United States were enforced. He was also there to ride herd over whatever agreements the Congress of the United States had made concerning international treaties. Now, in the age of Bush, the Attorney General is there to defy the people, to murder the Constitution, to tell the rest of the world to go pound sand in its nearest body orifice where it concerns international agreements regarding stuff like, let me think a minute, I got one, torture. The Attorney General, like every cabinet position this rat bastard in the White House has filled, is nothing but a joke, a farce, and a parody of what it should be. So yeah, Dianne Feinstein and Chuck Schumer could have just absolutely murdered the nomination of Michael Mukasey in committee. That's it. All over. Send us another one. But they didn't. So a coalition of progressive Democrats in California will ask the California Democratic Party to censure her at its executive board meeting coming up this weekend. That's according to the Huffington Post. Rick Jacobs, president of the Courage Campaign, a progressive organization in California, says, quote, Dianne Feinstein does not listen to the people of California. She supports George Bush's agenda time after time, end quote. And, of course, Feinstein's office did not respond to messages seeking comment. Here's the resolution. Whereas Senator Dianne Feinstein voted to support the nomination of Judge Michael Mukasey as United States Attorney General, thereby elevating to the highest position in law enforcement a man who refused to renounce the right of the president to resort to torture, and who refused to recognize waterboarding as a form of torture, and by this action, Senator Feinstein failed to oppose President Bush and failed to stand for the ideals of the Democratic Party, which abhors torture and stands firmly against its use by the United States at all times and places, and whereas Senator Feinstein voted to confirm Judge Leslie Southwick for a seat on the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Fifth Circuit, despite his clear record of racism and gender discrimination, thus failing to stand firmly with the Democratic Party, which supports gender equality and opposes racism in any of its manifestations, and whereas these examples are far from the only instances where Senator Feinstein, after seeking and securing the support and endorsement of the California Democratic Party, has failed to support the policies and principles of our party, therefore, be it resolved that the California Democratic Party expresses its disappointment at and censure of Senator Feinstein for ignoring democratic principles and falling so far below the standard of what we expect of our elected officials. You can join the campaign's call to censure. Go to couragecampaign.org. Couragecampaign.org. And if you want to go a little further, /censure the senator. Couragecampaign.org/censure the senator. Judge Leslie Southwick, he was another southern piece of human waste who, among other things, this rat bastard took a child away from its birth mother, took it, and gave it to the divorced father. Now, look, I'm a great one for joint custody. I really do believe that fathers are not, should not be shuffled off the stage where it concerns raising a child, whether they want to be or not. You know, a lot of men will say, what? $2,000 child support? Screw that. I'm out of here. No. Step up to the plate, bastard, and take care of the child that you produced. I really do believe that. But in this case, the father and the mother had not been married. And they had a baby. A little girl, I believe. And Judge Southwick decided that the mother was raising the little girl in what he called a lesbian environment. And because of that, because this little girl's mother, apparently, I'm saying apparently because I don't know the case entirely, apparently had a woman friend with whom she was deeply involved, because of that, this filthy piece of human waste, Judge Leslie Southwick, took her daughter. You remember we talked about this when this rat bastard was up for confirmation, and the Democrats just breezed him right on through. The Democrats on the Judiciary Committee. Oh yeah, oh sure, we don't care. He was the one that decided that was nothing wrong in using the N-word. I forget what that particular case was, but those were two glaring examples. We just talked about this a couple of months ago. So, yeah, Dianne Feinstein should be removed from office next week, as far as I'm concerned. Get her out of there. Jesus, God. Schumer, too. Bush, when we come back, stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M. If the plans were changed. If the plans were changed. You can beat us with wires.
Do not go gently into that good night. Rage, rage against the flying monkey right with Mike Malloy.
Mother, do you think she's good enough?
Twenty-one past the hour. A couple emails very quickly here. Marcia writes in regarding praying for rain. She writes, I hope that if other groups wanted to hold a religious observance for rain, the state would comply and participate. Maybe someone wants to perform a rain dance, or sacrifice a votive doll, or sprinkle chicken blood around, or chant, or meditate, or read the Book of Mormon, or maybe The Origin of Species. I think it is interesting that individuals who behave with no regard for ecology, because the rapture is coming, pray to God for relief of conditions brought about by their neglectful treatment of the planet. Marcia. She writes also, I don't mean to insult anyone's beliefs, just point out that once again, one certain religion thinks the universe revolves around them. Yeah, I know. Yeah, that's the thing. As they're praying for rain down here, Sonny Perdue, or the Kegel man, the lieutenant governor, nobody has suggested a moratorium on development, you see. No one has said, okay, look, this area was not built to sustain almost 6 million people, maybe 1 million on a good day, but for God's sake, we got to stop. No. We have water restrictions regarding our vegetables and our plants and flowers and lawns. But nobody has said no more building, no more office complexes, no more. We lose, you know what we lose here in the Atlanta area? 36 acres of grass or trees per day to the developers. And of that 36 acres, I think 60% of it winds up under tarmac. It's either parking lots or driveways or expressways or roads. Now, any fool knows what happens when you pave. Oh, God, never mind. Michael writes, greetings, Mike. Regarding gassing the beef, the point that Target is trying to get across is that the carbon monoxide makes the beef look fresh, but it does not keep the beef from contamination. The beef can be past the expiration date and be full of E. coli or salmonella bacteria, still look fresh, and kill you! Our favorite fascist corporate chain of department stores, Walmart, already got busted this year for poisoning over 200 shoppers. Happy holidays from Walmart. Oh, I know. We finally found two websites where you can find out toys that are not made in China. You know, we will give Molly, Kathy and I will give Molly three toys this year at our celebration of the winter solstice. That's what we have, the tree and the holly and the log and friends over and booze, not for Molly. It's winter solstice. I don't know what we're doing. We do not expose her to any kind of religious stuff that we can possibly avoid. Although we noticed the other day, she goes to a wonderful preschool. It's the oldest one in. I better not say the name. Somebody tried to kidnap her. But it's one of the oldest in this particular town. And it's just great. We love everybody there. They're wonderful people. It happens to be run by a church. And I can't say the denomination of the church either. Oh, my God. Because, you know, O'Reilly's four listeners threatened me. Oh, bite me. But anyway, when we registered her there, they made it a point of saying, no, we don't, no emphasis on religion. This is strictly, secular and it's a great preschool. Oh my God, I love this place. And it's very, very affordable. Of course, Molly's only going 2 days a week right now. So the other day, you pick up the story. What happened?
Well, it's not that it's not at all religious-based. It's just that they said that they don't teach Bible stories Bible verses or whatever. But the other day, after she came home, I said, are you hungry? Yeah. She didn't eat her lunch. Okay. You want a snack? Okay. So I put it down, and she clasped her little hands under her under her chin like a little triangle. And I said, what are you doing? And she said, sing with me, Mama. I said, I don't know what we're supposed to be singing. And she started singing, thank you, Father, thank you, Father, for our food, many, many blessings, many, many blessings. And I'm about to turn purple at this point, but thank goodness, because the last line she went, old man,
old man,
old man. So I thought she was just talking about you.
Yeah, well, she probably was. Actually, if she's going to sing that, it should be "Thank You, Mother," you know, Mother Earth. But I get the point. So we just kind of ignore it.
Well, and Mother Kathy, I'm the one that makes the damn sandwiches.
That's right, you are. All right, Bush. When we come back, stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
Tell me what you say. If you could talk to me, what news would you bring? Of voices in the sky. Voices in the sky. Voices in the sky. A parking lot with a pink hotel, a boutique, and a swinging hot spot.
What happens in those forests, because of lousy federal policy,
is they grow to be, they are not, they're not harvested.
Yeah, problem forest, there's too many trees. Jesus, oh. All right, very quickly, I just got this. This is from Cindy in Tampa. Hi, Mike, I know how you feel about the Christian faith. We've talked about it before. But if I may, I'd like to offer my opinion on Brother Love's Traveling Tent Revival show today in Atlanta. As an American and a Christian, I got to say I was simply aghast when I saw the prayer service on, of all places, the Weather Channel. Oh, my God. You're absolutely correct that the organizers of this event were totally out of line by staging it on state property. But it's Christians they aired, too. My sense is that God probably had his or her hands over his or her ears and was shouting, la, 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 during the service. Jesus said that it's sinful to make a big show out of prayer, and this certainly fell into the big show category. Jesus said that prayer should be offered in silence, in private, hence the term prayer closet. So in my view, hiring a Burt Lancaster imitator to play Rainmaker might have been more effective. I don't think it would have been terribly wrong for the governor to ask those who are believers throughout the state to offer up prayer as individuals. In my own long experience, that is how the power of prayer works. What happened today, however, crossed several big, important lines. Just my view as an American first and a Christian second, Cindy. Thanks, Cindy. I appreciate it. Yeah, it's in Matthew, isn't it, where Jesus talks about the hypocrites who pray openly. I think it's Matthew. All right. George Bush, in his quest to be a fiscally responsive and a great leader, had some bad news today for low-income U.S. families planning to rely on a federal program that helps pay expensive heating bills this winter. Yeah, Bush vetoed spending legislation that would have provided the financial assistance. So for the people who have been relying on that and who are counting on it this winter, drop dead. In some cases, literally. Bush rejected the compromise appropriations bill for the Departments of Labor, Health and Human Services, and Education. All three at once. Now, remember, Bush keeps saying that the Congress doesn't provide him with spending bills. And he's a lying bastard, because they do. But they contain things he doesn't like. Remember, he's a compassionate conservative. He's also a hypocrite. The bill that he rejected contained $2.4 billion in funding for what's called the Low-Income Home Energy Assistance Program. It's commonly known as LIHEAP, L-I-H-E-A-P. Representative Carolyn McCarthy, who's chairman of the House Education and Labor Subcommittee, which held a hearing today on the LIHEAP program, said, quote, Bush's veto puts the health and well-being of millions of families at risk this winter, end quote. Well, sure, but Bush doesn't care. Look what he's done to millions of families in Iraq. The Energy Department, by the way, forecasts that households that use heating oil, the Energy Department. Now, before I give the numbers, remember the Energy Department is run by energy corporations. So these are lowball figures. But the Energy Department forecasts that households that use heating oil will spend an average 26% more this winter compared to last winter. And they figure that will mean $375. Costs for propane expect to be up 20%, natural gas up 11%, electricity up 3%. Low-income families, according to the Department of Energy, spend an average of about 15% of their income on home energy bills compared to 3.4% for all other households. That figure doesn't come from the Energy Department. That comes from Mark Wolf, who heads a group representing state energy directors. I don't know what a state energy director is, do you? The bill that Bush vetoed would have boosted the LIHEAP budget by about $250 million. What is that, 6 hours of Iraq murder? Even with the additional funds, even with that $250 million, the program would have had enough money to cover only about 16% of the estimated 38 million poor households eligible for help. In America, son of a bitch, how did any of us sleep? 38 million households that need this. 47 million Americans with no health insurance. 11 million kids needing the S-CHIP program that he's also vetoed. Now, oddly, one David Manning, speaking on behalf of the American Gas Association, a trade group, a lobby, and this guy's obviously a lobbyist, he also called for Congress to increase the budget, despite the Bush administration's opposition. David Manning of the American Gas Association said, quote, "We believe it is absolutely essential to increase our nation's home energy commitment to America's most vulnerable citizens," end quote. Now, you can look at Manning one way or the other. He's just a shill for the gas industry, and obviously, if the money is provided by taxpayers, it still goes into the pockets of these rapacious bastards that provide the gas, or maybe he's being genuine. Bush justified his veto of the bill. He said, "Congress needs to cut out that pork and reduce the spending and send me a responsible measure I can sign into law." In the meantime, he also approved, he signed a $459 billion bill to increase the Pentagon's non-war funding. Do you understand that? $500 billion. That doesn't go to support troops. See, Republicans lie. Bush lies, Cheney lies. They're all lying sons of bitches. $500 billion was signed off today to go for non-war funding for the Pentagon. Yeah? Now, in the in what he vetoed today, it was about education, health care, job training programs, all of it down the toilet. It would have provided $150 billion in discretionary spending for the Departments of Education, Labor, Health, and Human Services. And Bush announced this as he was on an airplane en route to southern Indiana to deliver an economic speech.
God, an economic speech, huh?
At which his spokeswoman said he would criticize Congress for its wasteful spending. Ed Kennedy, chairman of the Health, Education, Labor, and Pension Committee, attacked both the veto and the level of the war spending. Kennedy said, quote, "Cancer research, investments in our schools, job training, protecting workers, many other urgent priorities have all fallen victim to a president who squanders billions of dollars in Iraq but is unwilling to invest in America's future." Well, of course, that's because Bush is the worst president this country, or for that matter, any country that had a president, has ever experienced. Dana Perino, too much cappuccino, said the veto measure exceeded the president's fiscal target by $10 billion. And she said, "We're calling Congress to take out the pork and reduce the overall spending levels attributed to the president." Bush, at the speech in Indiana, was kind of a jackass. He referred to, well, I'll let you hear it. He called the Democrats in Congress teenagers. But here, let's have Bush. Bush is talking about the budget in Indiana after vetoing all the stuff he vetoed today. Oh, and by the way, it was 1% over last year's expenditures. He's really a fiscally responsible Republican, isn't he? This filthy pig. So it's the only moron sound tonight because, well, I'm kind of getting sick of him. I mean, really, viscerally, gut level, sick of this bastard. But anyway, the hypocrite in chief ambled off his glorious ranch back to the public arena to again scold Democrats for spending too much of our money, your money, my money, on wasteful things like, you know, health care and education. And, you know, there's a big illegal war and occupation to fund. I heard a statistic on Oberman tonight that when you figure in the hidden costs of the illegal war, like benefits for the men and women he's wounded, and higher oil costs, and the interest payments, mainly to China, taken together, the actual cost of the war in Iraq and Afghanistan is approaching $1.4 trillion, or about 20 grand for every man, woman, and child in America. Huh? So, here, Bush talks about the Democrats. This is from a man who's gotten us into so much credit-related debt, even Paris Hilton is impressed.
"The majority was elected on a pledge of fiscal responsibility, but so far it's acting like a teenager with a new credit card."
Oh, screw you!
"Leadership in Congress has proposed to spend $22 billion more than my budget provides. Now, some of them claim that's not really much of a difference. The scary part is they seem to mean it.
Play that again. I want you to hear these Southern Indiana halfwits laughing about the teenager with the new credit card line. These are people, I will guarantee you, there are people in that audience laughing like a bunch of lemmings, deranged, sick lemmings. Oh, we got to play it when we come back? Okay, but there are people in that room who are laughing, who will suffer because of this. Some of them will find out that their SSI payments will be reduced. Some of them will find out all of a sudden they can't, they don't have the money or the government help to put mom or dad in a rest home. Some of them are going to find out that the special education needs of their child is now in the toilet, and they sit there and laugh. We'll play it for you again. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Wealthy, filthy, rich and young. One might wonder what great things they've done to become the fortunate ones. They're the happy members of the Lucky Sperm Club. The only thing they have to do is be conceived. It's great to be a member of the Lucky Sperm Club. Living in the lap of lazy luxury.
It's okay, Republicans. The pain will be over soon. Take a deep breath. Find your happy place. It's more of Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour. So as Bush stands there in Indiana and makes his snotty-ass comments about the Democrats in Congress are like teenagers with a new credit card, I can't say what that evokes in me. Because we would get a knock on the door before I got the sentence out. But the people who applaud him when he says that should be taken out and horsewhipped. Or better yet, just let them face the reality that they're going to face at some point in their lives. What was cut are funds for education and health care and job training programs, cancer research, investments in the schools, job training, all sorts of stuff. Especially when they cut research budgets. I wonder how many people are sitting here, you'll hear them applaud and laugh and hoot and holler. How many of them have cancers already eating into their vital organs and they just don't know it yet? How many men sitting there have prostate cancer that is ready to go full blast? How many sitting there have colon cancer and don't realize it? How many have meningiomas or malignant brain tumors and are not aware of it yet? And these dumb sons of bitches sit there and clap and applaud and laugh. It's an outrage.
The majority was elected on a pledge of fiscal responsibility. But so far, it's acting like a teenager with a new credit card. This year alone.
And that guy, right before he does his punchline, and then he always pauses and looks up like a deer in the headlights, waiting for the laughter or the applause. But you can hear a guy, play it one more time, Kathy, you can hear a guy cough right before he says the punchline. Listen.
The majority was elected on a pledge of fiscal responsibility. But so far, it's acting like a teenager with a new credit card.
Did you hear that guy cough? Sounds like somebody with maybe some growths in his upper respiratory tract. Or maybe the lower lobes of his lungs. And he just doesn't realize it yet. Well, guess what, Sparky? Funds for cancer research has been cut today. That's a shame, isn't it? I hate these people. I hate them with the breadth and depth and width my soul doth something. All right. Phone calls when we come back. We have a break coming here. Andre writes, Mike, listening to yesterday's podcast about the email from Jane, whose co-worker is a Bushy, the friend said that Iraqis are getting what they deserve. Here's the paradox. Iraqis are getting what they deserve, yet we are there for Iraqi freedom? There's no defensible position for what we were doing in Iraq. Yeah, that had to do with the emailer who said she had a 50-something friend who reasonably intelligent, well-educated, and insists that Iraq and 9/11 are linked. Yeah, we're there and said that the Iraqis are getting what they deserve as we continue, or they continue, to blow each other into red mist and kill their children and their babies and their teenagers. But we're supposed to be there for Iraqi freedom. And Ron in Anacort, Washington, is it Anacort or Anacortes? 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 Washington. Mike, the Exxon Valdez settlement is going to the Supreme Court in the spring. Judge Alito is not going to rule on the punitive damages suit because he has stock in Exxon. I think there are probably other judges also who have stock in Exxon. With Alito not ruling, this leaves eight judges. Do you believe, as I do, that with a ruling of 4-4, Exxon will get out of paying $2.5 billion in damages, which is, of course, only about 3 weeks' worth of profits, and thus set a precedent of giant oil companies and other corporations not having to pay punitive damages in the future? Can you believe that by delaying this for as long as they have, that 30% of the folks who might get paid for damages have died? How could the circuit courts not rule on this decision? I think we are all screwed with what is about to happen in this case. What do you think, Ron? Ron, here's what I think. It is astonishing to me that something that happened... When was the Exxon Valdez incident off the coast of Alaska? 1994? 93? And Exxon Mobil... Remember, Condoleezza Rice sat on their board back then, didn't she? ExxonMobil has not... Oh, well. So what? Spitfire sent this in. Why the right wing hates the troops. The military teaches the grunts to work together as a single unit. A fellowship that teaches that. That teaches that if one member goes down, the others are to carry him out. They do what is needed to help their buddy. This is the opposite of the right wing's every man for himself mentality. Now, while it's true that the military is set up in hierarchic structure, the grunts at the bottom are the most numerous and often find themselves alone with their fellow grunts. Officers are actually visitors to their world. Their immediate superior may be a squad leader, which is someone chosen from within their own group. This is why right-wingers hate the idea of joining the military. It's not just the cowardice, it's the lack of being able to control things. The idea of having to take orders from someone else cuts into their ego, and having to depend on others sounds too, you know, socialistic. Now we have a situation with veterans needing someone to carry them out from a new battlefield, a battlefield of red tape designed to demonstrate indifference to their medical and psychological needs. The paperwork is also full of threats to prosecute any false applications to discourage anyone from even trying to get help. The right wing, of course, considers people who sign up for the military to be freeloaders, as they always have in every prior war. Anyone who reads up on the trials of the Bonus Army and what happened to them knows this is nothing new. Yeah, the Bonus Army, the World War I vets who were promised a bonus. And we were in the Great Depression, and the bonus hadn't been paid, and they gathered, I think I've got this right, and they gathered in D.C. And who was the president then? Harding? I don't know. I know I'm screwing it up. I know I'm screwing it up. I guess it was in the 20s, or late 20s, early 30s, the bonus marchers. And there was a colonel, or was he a brigadier already, named Douglas MacArthur, who was, I think I've got this right, I've probably got this all screwed up, who was told to stop the vets from marching, and it came very close to American soldiers firing on American veterans. Now, somebody send me the fact.
Drunk in a minute. midnight choir. I have tried in my way to be free.
Welcome back. It's about 7 past the hour. Sorry about the break at the top of the hour. I just got lost in whatever the hell I was saying. I know it was important. But and the great commercial machine just rolled right over us. Exxon Valdez incident occurred in 1989, Al writes. Okay. He says, I remember because I was a senior in high school at the time. I can't believe they're still arguing about it. Now, what about Katrina? All right, one last item here that, and then we're going to come to your phone calls. And the number here is 800-989-1480. I just got this. This is from Channel 2, WESH, in Orlando, Florida. Wife faces deportation after spouse dies in Iraq. That's the headline. A local mother and Venezuelan citizen is at risk of being deported after her husband died in Iraq last year. Diana Hurd's life changed dramatically when her husband Jeff was killed in March of 2006, 3 months before he and Diana Hurd's two-year wedding anniversary, which would have made Diana a legal resident. Now, however, immigration officials said, I guess it's Diana's citizenship request, died with her husband. The Hurd's son, this woman and her dead husband, have a son, Brian. He was born in the U.S. just before Jeff went back to Iraq. Diana is now at risk of being deported to Venezuela. If deported, she would bring Brian, a U.S. citizen, with her. Diana said, I wanted a normal life in the United States. She has been fighting to stay in the U.S., but her petition and her appeal were both rejected. Dahiana said, Jeffrey's sister, that's her dead husband, Jeffrey's sister, Jeffrey's brother, they want to know what happened. And when I say nothing good, they say, oh my God, we're so sorry, we don't know what to do. Jeff Hurd is buried in Orlando. Dahiana is worried that she will never be able to visit his grave if she is sent back to Venezuela. I hate these bastards. I hate these bastards in the Bush administration. I just hate them. Oh, my God. Nick in New Hampshire sent me that horrifying story. Thanks, everybody, for sending the information on the bonus marchers. And I got the essential facts right. Except there were people who died. They were fired on and tear gassed. All right, let's do some phone calls. You want to do that? Huh? You ready to do that? Okay, let's do some phone calls. Let's start with Aram, who is calling from Tucson, Arizona. Aram, welcome to the program.
Hey, Mike. It's been a couple of weeks. I thought I'd call in and say hi and see if I can understand this concept of plants.
Okay.
It's perfectly okay for the chimp in charge to vet his audience, kick out anybody who he doesn't agree with.
Right.
Have them arrested.
Right.
Hillary Clinton puts one person. Oh, I'm sorry. And have Jeff Gannon, who is apparently some likes to be.
Easy now. Easy like, now.
Yeah, easy. That's why I'm editing myself.
Okay. Okay.
Okay. Toss some softball questions, but Hillary has one person show up who asks her a planted question, and it's the end of the world.
Yeah.
What is this? Say as I do, as I say, not as I do. Welcome to Republican America. Welcome to Republican politics light. This is unbelievable to me. They plant people in audiences. They sent Tom DeLay sent his minions after Nick Lampson after the bug man left and refused to run and tried to get himself put in, I think it was Virginia at the time.
Uh-huh.
And this. These right-wing idiots complain about Hillary.
Well, the weird part of it is, you expect the right-wing the right-wing radio talk show hosts and the right-wing bloggers to make a big deal about this, but
It's so-called mainstream media that would never criticize Mr. Bush for doing exactly the same thing. Excuse me?
They've been holding his water and polishing his axe handles for 7 years now. And it's just, it's amazing to me, the hypocrisy. And the sad thing is because American Idol is on and all these little diversions that we have, the American people stay woefully ignorant and become the most blissful people on the planet.
Well, I don't know if we're blissful, if they're blissful, the ones you're talking about. I think they're brain dead, and there's got to be a difference. Aaron, thank you. I appreciate you checking in, pal. Brian is calling from Toledo, Ohio, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Hey, Brian, welcome to the program.
Hey, how's it going there? Great to hear a voice to battle the NASCAR nation there.
Yeah, right. Did you send me an email asking me about my roots in Toledo?
No, I don't. I actually don't have a computer, but no.
I guess somebody else did. But anyway, welcome to the program.
Oh, Mr. You are from Toledo?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Oh, wow. I didn't know. That's cool. Yeah, hopefully I got a later question for you. Out of all the right-wing talk shows from Glenn Beck to Savage to Levin, who do you think is the worst out of them all?
There's no difference. They're all exactly the same. You never hear any original comments. Spend a day, and maybe you have, spend a day, start in the morning, listen to all of them, and what you will hear by the end of the day is the same thing, the same subject, even the same words and phrases. So there is none that is the worst of all these animals. In terms of just sheer idiocy, I would have to say that this Michael Savage is out there all by himself, but he's a psychopath. The rest of them are not psychopaths. They're sociopaths, but they're not psychopaths. So they're pretty much all the same. I don't think there is a worst, except for Savage.
Yeah, he's pretty up there. But that Glenn Beck's a strange one, too. He somehow got himself a TV show. And it's weird. All these guys, they propagate all their books. I mean, do you have any books out by any chance?
Mm-mm.
Wow. That's what some of the...
No, I contributed one when I worked at Air America, but I never got paid. Because Air America is run by crooks, liars, and thugs. That's a whole different story.
Well, let's hope maybe some type of Air America can build up, and maybe, because with Hillary Clinton, if she comes in the White House, these right-wing guys, they're going to be nonstop and be completely ridiculous.
Well, yeah, that's true.
It'll be entertaining, especially Limbaugh. He'll blow his mind.
It might push Limbaugh back into drugs, which would be a good thing, because he's driven himself deaf. He's driven himself impotent. The next thing that will happen if he does more of his OxyContin is he will probably kill himself, which would probably, in the great scheme of things, not be a bad idea for the rest of America across the fruited plain.
Oh, get a well-deserved rest on the radio airwaves.
Yeah, it would indeed, Brian. Hey, listen, man, thanks a lot for checking in. I appreciate your call. Take care. Mark is calling from Georgia, listening on the Internet. Hey, Mark.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing all right. How about you?
Oh, love your show, Mike, but I've told you that many times before. So.
You have indeed, but it's always good to hear it. Thank you.
Have you heard the latest about the news, about Fox News and the...
I only heard a little bit of this about Judith Regan is claiming that the Fox News executives, here's the surprise, asked her to lie?
I can't believe that.
About Giuliani or something?
Yeah, I don't believe, you can't believe that, can you, Fox News, why?
No.
Well,
no.
The sources indicate she has tapes as well.
Oh, good. Well, Judith Regan is very pissed off because she really took a hosing because the publishing company of which she was the manager or the owner, I don't know, it was an offshoot of one of... I think it was HarperCollins,
yeah.
which is also owned by Fox, owned by Murdoch.
Yeah.
And she had her own imprint, and she was going to publish the O.J. Simpson book, If I Did It, or whatever the hell the garbage was called. And she was really taken to task about it and wound up not publishing it and losing her job at Regan Books, which, like I said, is owned by Murdoch. So... the fact that she's coming out now, good. I love it when these rats all fall on each other and bite each other. Hold on a second, Mark. Let me do this break. I'll come back and we'll finish up. This is Nova M. I'm Mike Malloy. Stay with us.
I lost my ignorance, security in my mind. I'm all alone in the world to my spies. Isn't your promise dead? Your promises and lies. And lies!
Our Pickles Bush. When Georgie falls asleep, I creep into the Oval Office, sneak a ciggy, and turn on Mike Malloy. Then I reprogram Georgie's speed dial. The simple pleasures.
Twenty-one past the hour, we're talking with Mark, calling in from Georgia. Mark, here's the skinny. This happened today, I believe. Judith Regan has filed. Now, you keep in mind, Judith Regan, not only did she run Regan Books, but she also was having adulterous sex with Bernie Kerik.
Yeah.
Giuliani's albatross in an apartment overlooking Ground Zero. That apartment had been rented to give Kerik close approximation to this terrible tragedy, and he's up there boinking Judith Regan. So anyway, when Rupert Murdoch fired her because of the I Did It, O.J. Simpson book thing, according to her lawsuit, she's suing him for defamation, claiming that she was unjustly tarred as an anti-Semite when she was fired last year. What the hell does... What does that have to do with any of this? It's a $100 million lawsuit filed today in New York State Supreme Court. She accuses several defendants, including Murdoch's News Corporation and HarperCollins Publishers, of orchestrating a smear campaign that was intended, listen to this, to advance the Murdoch political agenda and protect Rudy Giuliani's presidential ambitions. According to Regan, Murdoch employees were aware of her personal relationship with Bernard Kerik, and fearing that she had damaging information on the former police commissioner and Giuliani's business partner, they knew they would be protecting Giuliani if they could preemptively discredit her.
Yeah.
And it goes on and on and on. You can see the whole thing at smokinggun.com. The entire lawsuit is there. It's a 72-page complaint. And it even quotes from the sex suit once filed against Fox's Bill O'Reilly.
Oh, good. That's even more fun.
Yeah, it's all in there. So just go to smokinggun.com and look.
Are you going to make a prediction that this is going to be a lot of fun?
Say what?
Are you going to make a prediction that this is going to be a lot of fun?
I hope so. I hope so. You got to wonder why Murdoch, well, you don't have to wonder. Murdoch has been holding fundraisers or contributing money to Hillary's campaign. But his real goal, don't forget, Murdoch is a Nazi. Hillary
yeah.
Clinton is not. Hillary Clinton is Republican light. She's a conservative, whatever, but she's not a Nazi. Murdoch is. Giuliani is. Kerik is. Of course, Kerik's going to go to prison for a long time. But Nazis have to hang together, or eventually they all hang separately. And this business about Murdoch providing money to Hillary Clinton's campaign, that's a little bit of cover all your bets, but it also is a smokescreen. Murdoch no more wants Hillary Clinton to be president than he wants, prostate cancer. What he wants is Giuliani to be president. And if he can get that, then as far as Murdoch is concerned, he owns not just the airwaves, but also the printing presses in America. It's a real dangerous situation with this rat bastard.
Yeah. Well, hopefully this will take a lot of air out of it.
Well, let's hope. Listen, thanks for checking
Thank
in,
you.
Mark. All right, I appreciate your call. Phil is calling from Scranton, PA, listening via the Internet. Hey, Phil.
Hey, Mike, how are you tonight?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
You're talking about the fact that Bush, talking about this credit card thing. as irresponsible as I'd say 60% of the American people on getting these refinancing their homes,
right,
doing
right.
all this kind of stuff. I see it happening here in my neighborhood, and I see it happening to people at my job. I have a modest home. I didn't pay much for it. Mm-hmm. God forbid if I lose my job, I can still, pay my mortgage.
Right.
But you're talking people having mortgages like $2,000 a month. I mean, sometimes a little higher than that.
Uh-huh.
How are these people, that's what's going to make this country crumble and crumble hard.
Well,
I
certainly agree with the idea of people taking personal responsibility. On the other hand, the mortgage companies, I've watched this develop over the past 5 years, especially the past 3 or 4 years. The mortgage companies, these hedge fund operators, and all these squirmy, smelly, stinky
yeah.
capitalist pig bastards who convinced people who wanted, what did people want? They wanted to buy a house. That's all they wanted.
Yeah.
So they come up with these teaser rates. Well, it's only going to be 8% interest, for the first
exactly.
first 3 years, and it's going to double. And granted, most of us are not all that bright. We should be brighter when it comes to reading the fine print, to understanding the intricacies of mortgage lending and interest rates and so on and so forth. When somebody says, it's 14% interest instead of 8%. Most of us don't really stop and think what that means. That
right.
14% interest as opposed to 8% interest is enormous. So while I do believe that people should take some responsibility for what we all get ourselves into, I think these filthy, predatory lending agencies set us up for this. So I feel a lot of sympathy for people who are going through this. Phil, I got to leave you there. Thanks a lot, man. I appreciate it. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Your money grow, it compounds over time, which means money grows and grows bigger and bigger and bigger.
Twenty-five before the hour, if you want to get the details on the Judith Regan case against the Murdoch crime empire, go to thesmokinggun.com. Rob sent me an email. I said smoking gun, and if you go there, something to do with Tom Cruise or something. It's thesmokinggun.com. Thanks, Rob. Back to your phone calls. Evan is calling from Durham, North Carolina. Evan, welcome to the program.
Hello.
Hey.
Hey. Yeah, I was calling because I had, you mentioned that light program.
Yeah,
the heating
program, right.
Yeah. Well, it's not just heat, it's electricity, too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I had that. I had to take advantage of that a few years ago in 2003.
Uh-huh.
I was a responsible person, taking care of my business.
Right.
Like the Republicans want us to do.
Right.
And the company that I work for laid off just a whole swath of people.
Sure.
And for about 2 months, I was basically scrambling with the part-time job and everything
mm-hmm.
and trying to find a full-time job. So I was like ended up being like 2 months behind
mm-hmm.
On the electricity. And so I was told about this program, and I went downtown and signed up for it. And the lady was like, where are your bills? And I gave my bills for the past couple of months. And she said, okay, that's good. We'll take care of it. And I said, that's it?
Hmm. Yeah,
that's it. What else? I mean, anything else I need to do? No, that's it. Now, if it happens, you know, if you come up short next month, you need to get in contact with us as soon as possible because, you know, we have a very limited amount of money. But, I mean, it was a snap. I mean, it's a program that works. It works for a lot of people. I mean, I don't have any kids, but for people who do have kids, you know, this is a necessary,
sure,
real thing. You know,
sure,
what I mean?
Absolutely. That's why the Republicans hate it. That's why Bush vetoes it. These people have no heart, Evan. They have no soul. These are dead people who are just walking around and causing hell for everybody else. It's astonishing to me that in a country that can spend billions upon billions of dollars on destruction and war and mm-hmm. phony contracts to their buddies in the defense industry, something like a crappy-ass $250 million to keep this LIHEAP program going gets vetoed. It almost enrages me. It does enrage me, but I don't act on the rage, because if I did, then my wife and child would have to be applying for something because my ass would be in prison.
Right, I have always thought that, you know, one of their purposes was to create and keep a permanent underclass.
Yes, absolutely.
And when I started kind of listening to, you know, your show and Randy's show and Tom Hartman and that sort of thing, I was like, you know, this sounds exactly what I, you know, it's like, I'm not crazy. They have been ever since, you know, my time, Reagan, coming up during that time. It was so obvious that what these people wanted to do was keep a certain number of people down with no options.
Well, that's one of the requirements of the kind of predatory capitalism these people follow. You've got to have always, always a pool of unemployed people, because that does a couple of things. First of all, it makes those people compete for these chump ass jobs that drives the wages down. Now, this is not even considering about sending the jobs over to Mexico and then to China and then to Korea, or not Korea,
right,
but to Vietnam. But keeping a workforce, a pool of workers who are not working, so that they will claw and bite and stomp on each other to get jobs that corporate America doles out like candy to fools that come trick-or-treating on Halloween. That's how they operate.
Yeah, and one more thing. I heard that BP got fined like $640 million for some kind of environmental catastrophe they pled guilty to.
Yeah, they were dumping. First of all, they were dumping mercury into Lake Michigan. But I believe the case you're referring to was the one where one of their refineries blew up down in Texas, and 14 or 15 workers were killed a couple of years ago. I think that's the case you're referring to.
Okay, yeah, a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah,
and
all right.
That is a felony. That was a felony offense that they got fined for. And my question is, for people that I know, dudes who I know, if they have a felony, they get fired. And, no, you know, they can't get money anywhere. So
right.
The idea that, you know, this is a corporation that is a felony, and yet no individual in that corporation is going to get arrested or fired or otherwise.
Of course not. Of course not. That's the wonderful aspect of corporations. They're not really people, even though corporations have the same constitutional protections as people, like free speech, like a corporation can say any damn thing it wants to say, and you and I can't do anything about it because corporations now, and have been for a number of years, are protected by the First Amendment, even though a corporation is not a person. And then when the hammer comes down, though, and somebody's ass should go to prison, look at what happened with Union Carbide in Bhopal, India, way back in the 80s, was it in the 80s, where all those people around mm-hmm. Union Carbide plant went to sleep, and the next morning when they woke up, a couple thousand of them were dead. And scores of thousands of people were suffering from lung disease and damage mm-hmm. because of the poison that went out that night. And to this day, it's my understanding, I may be wrong here, but to this day, nothing has been done about it. This is how corporations work. If I go into a grocery store and steal $100 worth of food, my ass is going to jail. But if I'm a corporation and responsible for 17 people being blown to pieces and incinerated because of a boiling, blasting inferno of hot petroleum, I can pay a fine. Evan, I got to go. Thanks, man. I appreciate you checking in. Hope to hear from you again. Take care. Corporations being the same as... The Bhopal Indian thing... No, I'll do a Wikipedia when the program's over. Y'all don't have to do all that and send it to me. But I'm pretty sure that what happened in Bhopal, India is still hanging. I don't know, maybe not. Scott is calling from Federal Way, Washington, listening on KPTK. Hey, Scott.
Incidentally, that town you were trying to pronounce is Anacortes.
Anacortes?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's on the peninsula. But anyway... yeah, all of these bills that Bush vetoed and stuff, but impeachment is off the table for the Democrats. They have better things to do. Well, now what have they accomplished? They've accomplished getting a crappy minimum wage passed at 560 or whatever it is an hour.
Yeah,
big deal.
Yeah.
I mean, big freaking deal to anyone, you know, who has to live off of that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the fact of the matter is that to an extent, they allow themselves to be made fools out of. They absolutely allow themselves to be made fools out of, and they expect for us to reward them by returning them to office again, you know, with the scare tactic, well, you know, we're better than Republicans.
Right.
But you see so many that cross over to the other side to help them out. And things that they could stop, they don't stop.
That's right.
So, you know... You know, it's absolutely ridiculous and absolutely asinine. Now, I may believe in some individual candidates, but, you know, I'm tired of this mentality, and I'm sick and tired of hearing people like Bernie Sanders and like Harry Reid go on these talk shows and stuff and talking about what all the wonderful things that they have to do that's better than impeachment, and then they're getting made fools out of.
Mm-hmm.
And I tell you something, you know, if I were a talk show host and they had these people coming on constantly saying that, I would be pissed off.
Oh, sure.
Because I would feel like I was being made a fool out of and being used by these people to keep the common folk in line.
Mm-hmm.
That's just absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah, I hear you, Scott.
And as far as for Hillary is concerned,
mm-hmm.
Well, what's that phrase about, you know, when you lay around with dogs, you get fleas?
Right.
You know, the fact of the matter is, I'm sorry, but, you know, she's getting picked on. Well, to an extent, she deserves it. I mean, you know, talk to me with somebody with honor who may be running for president like Cynthia McKinney. I'll defend her, but I would not defend Hillary. You know, her husband made part of this possible by signing on to the Communications Act and stuff.
Sure.
And
yeah.
They, you know, both of them are schmoozing with all of these people and stuff. I mean, you know,
yeah,
I'm sorry.
Yeah. Clinton could have vetoed that. And forever, as long as I'm in the radio business, that will be one of the reasons I don't like him. Scott, I got to leave it there. Thanks, pal. Thanks for checking in. Take care. We'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy.
Hey, don't worry about what makes you cry. Your child's in a ride. How they gonna die? Gasoline's in short supply. ExxonMobil is barely getting by. With millions in profits, it's just another lie. Hey, don't it make you red state? Hey, don't it make you red state? Hey, don't it make you red state?
Before the hour, Celia writes in, eek, Hillary Rodham Clinton is not Republican light. She's Bush light. Don't forget she's taken money from Rupert Murdoch, who was hedging his bet between Clinton and Giuliani. Of course, he would like Giuliani to win. He wants control of Mideast communications.
It means that Hillary made a Faustian bargain with Murdoch to get his support, not only his cash, but to fend off his swift-boating attacks, as Murdoch did with Kerry and Bill Clinton. Okay. Yeah. When you're in a den of wolves, I guess you kind of, you know, rip off one of your legs and toss it to the head wolf in the hope that the head wolf will be happy and keep the rest of them away, right? Thanks to our crew, Ian Huff, who engineered the program out of Phoenix tonight and also handled your calls, Billy Foster, who is our Billy Foster. Chris in Minnesota, our senior correspondent, Catherine Bay, our executive producer. Lisa is calling from Tampa, listening via the Internet, of course, since we are not allowed on the air in Tampa. Hi, Lisa.
Hey. Hi, Mike. Yeah, I was just calling about that bill he just vetoed.
Oh, yeah.
It just makes me so sick. Well, literally. Mm-hmm. Because I've got a recurrence of cancer. And 10 years ago, you know, I went through the stem cell and everything to get rid of it. Well, you know, I had hope. You know, I felt good about fighting it. And it's just, you know, it's like after he vetoed this bill, it just gets me so mad.
I can understand. I can understand. The hideous part, you know, you expect a creature like Bush to do these evil things. The hideous part of that was what Kathy played tonight when she played that soundbite from Indiana where he announces these cuts. And he says, you know, the Democrats are acting like teenagers with a credit card. And this filthy audience of right-wing Republicans carefully screened to make sure that only people who would like to, I don't know, have sex with Bush, I guess, are allowed in. And they laugh. They laugh and applaud when he makes his little laugh-line comment about Democrats and credit cards. And you got to wonder, at least I do, Lisa, how many of those people who are laughing and applauding will eventually face a crisis in their own life that...
Especially now with all the chemicals that...
Oh, sure.
But a crisis
that could have been addressed with government help, government research, government money. I mean, isn't that what... There's no such thing as people making it on their own.
Lead causes cancer.
Well, yeah, it does.
People don't get it. I mean... Who knows how much we've been saturated with, you know, all these chemicals coming from China. They don't look at all the pollution in that country.
They don't care
about themselves. What makes the American people think that these countries selling us our goods are going to, you know, do the right thing and not make, you know, stuff that's full of poison?
Right.
It just irks me so much. You know, and tomorrow I got to go see the doctor, and you know, and I talked to the doctors, and I watched that film from Michael Moore. You know, I went out and I bought that CD, and
right.
It just makes you realize how disadvantaged Americans are. You know, and I when they say, "Oh, this is the best country in the world," I'm like, "Oh, you know, how can you say that?"
Mm-hmm.
We're so brainwashed, and it just irks me. It just gets me so mad sometimes. You know, But I just wanted to call and say thanks for all the work you and Kathy are doing, man. You guys are like angels.
Well, that's that's very kind of you to say, Lisa. Thanks. I appreciate it. Take care, Lisa. We'll talk again. I wish we were on the air in Tampa. Lisa is just like all the rest of us. You know, when you stop and think what this filthy Bush administration, Republicans in general, but this degenerate administration and all of its shills and supporters in media, are they immune? No, they're not immune. They're just like me, just like Lisa, just like Kathy, just like our kids and your kids and our relatives and our entire network of people. We all run a 1 in 2, or is it 1 in 3 chance of getting cancer? We all are going to face, if we live long enough, at some point, with most of us are anyway, with a need for insurance to take care of the catastrophic events that occur in the last 5, 6, 7, maybe 3, 4, 2 years of life. We know this because we watch everybody around us.
We also, on a brighter, potentially brighter side, we all have kids or grandkids or nieces or nephews or grandnieces or grandnephews, whatever, that are struggling to, they should be struggling to learn, to be educated. And this filthy, corrupt George W. Bush has put this hideous No Child Left Behind monstrosity in our public schools that does not teach our children. It teaches our children to be stupid. It teaches our children to handle tests so that they will become good little drones and work for corporate America when they come out and do nothing except exactly what they are told. It's just awful. I just wonder, do these people think that they live someplace other than where Lisa and I and you and everybody else lives? I guess they do, don't they? They don't think it. I mean, they actually do. What was this I read, that in some of the areas in San Diego or in Southern California where those horrendous fires were a month or so ago, there was an insurance company there, I'm drawing a blank, on, was it AIG, that provided fire trucks to their homeowners. They came out and put out the fires near their homeowner policyholders. Or so, I'm probably screwing that story up too. Unbelievable stuff. They live differently from you and me, don't they? All right, listen, thanks for hanging out tonight. I'll see you tomorrow night. All right, take care. Do take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.